Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle. Because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the NASCAR NBC podcast. I'm your host, Nate Ryan. Our guest today is Chris Gabehart, crew chief for Denny Hamlin's number 11 FedEx Toyota. Chris is in his second season with Denny. Last year, they reached the championship round in addition to winning the Daytona 500 together. They stayed unbeaten in the Great American Race to start 2020 as well. But then a month into the season, all that momentum was halted by the COVID-19 pandemic, which of course has put life on pause, not just for NASCAR, but for all of us as we know it. In the meantime, of course, there is iRacing. The Pro Invitational Series continues this Sunday at Dover on Fox and FS1, and the IndyCar iRacing Challenge will conclude Saturday with the series finale at Indianapolis Motor Speedway. That'll be on at 2:30 p.m. Eastern on NBCSN. Denny Hamlin won the opening race of the Pro Invitational at Homestead Miami Speedway. He's a very accomplished iRacing driver and team owner, and his crew chief also has a history in iRacing and real racing. Chris Gabehart was a super late model racer of some renown and won a prestigious race in Nashville before he got into crew chiefing full time. He remains an avid iRacing fan on the side, owns a sim rig, and has been practicing on iRacing lately with Denny. In this conversation you're about to hear, Chris has some great insight into how drivers and crew chiefs in Cup can use iRacing to stay sharp together during this extended layoff from racing. And for those who recall the last episode in which Parker Kligerman and I talked about the wonders of Twitch, Chris Gabehart has a very interesting perspective. He's learned a lot about his driver, Denny Hamlin, by watching his Twitch channel. It's fascinating stuff, and I think you'll enjoy hearing a crew chief describe learning something new about his driver. Before we get started, this is now the second time I've taped a podcast using video conferencing. The audio again turned out really well, I think, but there were a couple of glitches when the laptop I was using made a ding, so apologies for that. And a special thanks to Lisa Hughes Kennedy at Toyota Racing PR, who ensured I had a backup recording just in case, and also coordinated this conversation. Thanks to Lisa. So we'll get to the conversation with Chris Gabehart right after this. Chris, thanks for being a guest here on the NASCAR NBC podcast, and welcome. Thanks for being here.
Hey, no, thanks for having me.
So I want to talk to you a little bit about this iRacing phenomenon, and I understand that Denny Hamlin, obviously, we've been watching him win and compete on a regular basis in the Pro Invitational Series for NASCAR, but I understand that you've been involved in the background as well there. Tell us about what you've been doing.
Yeah, so involved in the background at a highly technical level in iRacing, probably not. Denny's got some highly established drivers on his team that definitely have helped him with the ins and outs of how to be competitive in that space. But definitely, I enjoy playing as well, and Denny and I communicated about it a fair amount and even played together some, but for totally different reasons than what you might see on Sunday. He's got a pretty dedicated staff that helps him be fast on Sundays there.
So what are you doing then during the course of the race or the run-up to a race to help him out?
So for Denny and I, really what it provides is a better communication platform between what he might fight on in an actual race, at an actual track, versus what it is that the game might be telling him, and therefore me, because I'm allowed to play with him. So, you know, when we do drive together, whether it be in a practice or whatever, we can communicate what it is that he's feeling there that may or may not correlate to real life. So I believe Dover's coming up next. So you can talk about how the fall off into the corners at Dover, where you really take that big jump and land into the corner at Dover, and how the car reacts when it lands through there as being real or not, and then the pop up out of the corner at Dover and what that feels like versus real life. And as the track rubbers up, you know, iRacing does a really good job of modeling all that stuff very, very accurately. So it provides a way for he and I to communicate that's more than just words. With the driving background that I have, I can get in there and drive with him, and he can help communicate to me what that feels like in real life and how accurate that is or isn't.
How often are you guys driving in those practice races during a week?
It's not been a lot, but to me, this is a more broad tool. Honestly, I've had a rig myself for years now, and one of the reasons I bought it, other than it's a lot of fun, and there's a lot of different cars and tracks and stuff that you can do, that iRacing does a great job of allowing you to become a off-road racer for a day, or what's it like to do a Formula One race at this track, or, you know, all kinds of great stuff that we'd never have an opportunity to do. It allows for. So the fun side of it is the obvious part, but to me, their modeling is so good that it allows me to go to these tracks during the week while we're racing and just get a feel for, get acclimated to Charlotte. Okay, what's he going to be fighting in turn one at Charlotte? It's got this awkward set of bumps getting into one that really makes the car get light until the splitter settles down and loads the car up, and man, okay, yep, I got it. That's what he's going to be complaining about there. That kind of thing, week in and week out, is a tool that I use personally and gives us an opportunity to communicate with each other when needed.
So this is another example of your background as a driver then helping you as a crew chief. You mentioned that you've had this rig for years, and I know you've got the late model driving background. Tell us a little bit about how much you drove, how much success you had, and how that helps you in getting involved in iRacing this way.
Yeah, so, you know, I've raced since, I mean, gosh, I'm turning 39 here in a couple weeks. I've raced for competitively at a regional level or higher for 28 years now, which is insane to say. That makes me sound so old. But from go-karts to USAC open wheel midgets on the pavement side to super late models at a regional and national level, I've been driving since I was 11 years old, and you know, quit full time 9 years, I guess, ago now. So a lot of experience. Certainly the most relatable to Denny and I would be the super late model side of things. And how it helps me with iRacing is I've been to a lot of these tracks in a super late model that I can also run a super late model in iRacing. And I validated for myself that, man, this is really realistic. They've done a great job modeling this. This is a lot like what the cars drive like. So that's a personal validation. And then Denny can do the same on the cup side of things at certain tracks that we go to and say, yeah, this is really realistic. So then that allows me to get in there with him and go driving at a particular track and say, okay, I know from my background that, you know, they've modeled a lot of things correctly. And Denny's telling me, yep, this is a lot what it feels like. So that provides us the foundation that we need to really talk in a lot more detail than words can provide.
And so you've had this iRacing rig, Chris, since well before you became the 11 crew chief then. You said you've had it for several
years. Yeah, I've had it for almost 4 years now. Yeah, and I've played it longer than that on and off, but I've had it for the better part of 4 years. Really when I moved into the crew chief role at JGR with on the Xfinity side, I honestly bought it as a tool to help enhance my ability to communicate with the drivers. And it's not that I use it every week, or that, you know, any of my drivers ever even knew I was doing it, but it just provides me with a little extra detail to understand what it is that they may be fighting at one track or another.
Tell me about your real life success and your iRacing success. How many victories in the super late model side in real life? How many victories in iRacing on the super late model side?
Yeah, so my biggest claim to fame in super late model racing would be winning the All-American 400 at Nashville, which is, you know, an iconic super late model race. I've had a lot of success at the Winchester 400, never won it. Won the CRA Super Series Championship, which is a, you know, kind of a regional touring series championship, one of the bigger in the country these days. And, you know, been to Five Flags several times and ran in the Snowball Derby, a lot of that kind of stuff. The iRacing side of things, because, again, my real job actually is very busy. So I don't want to portray that I have 30 hours a week to dedicate to iRacing by any stretch. So the racing side of things, I haven't done a ton of on iRacing. It's more about going and practicing on the tracks and maybe jumping in a race or two here or there for fun. Until recently, I have done a little bit more of the racing just because we got so much time on our hands right now and it's the end thing to do. But for the most part, I use iRacing as a tool to further my understanding.
So practicing and not really competing to try to
win. For the most part, yeah. I mean, I do jump in races here or there, but for the most part, it's a work tool, I promise.
Yeah. make sure Coach Joe hears that. Each race that they've had in the Pro Invitational Series, have you been able to run like one practice race at that track with Denny?
Not always with Denny, but I do try to jump in at each track and get a feel for, you know, what it is they might be fighting. He'll send me the actual setup that they're going to race. And, you know, it just provides me an opportunity to say, okay, I've been there and done it, and you know, if it ever comes up, he and I can talk about it. Moving forward, it obviously, you know, we're looking at some pretty interesting times where schedules and event formats could be. So I think you're going to see crew chiefs and drivers get really creative with how they prep for these races. And a lot of drivers, while Denny's not one of them, have experienced iRacing for the first time in any amount of detail, and they're realizing that it could be a tool that we could use over the coming months to help us get prepared for the actual event. I mean, it's actually that realistic. And while you won't be paying attention to setup specific things, getting reps prior to the race where you may not practice or qualify will be a big deal.
Yeah, and certainly for you guys, Chris, I mean, you and Denny had such success last year, but people might forget that was only your first season of working together as driver crew chief. You're only four races really into your second season. So what areas do you feel like you guys are still working on communicating and talking through changes on the radio, and how can iRacing maybe help make that a little bit easier when we do go back to the track for real?
Yeah, that's a good question. So obviously towards the end of last year, the last 15 or 20 races of the season, we really hit our stride when we started coming back to these tracks for a second time, which was as much as anything about me having a notebook built about the track that I had been to the first time. Okay, here's the things that we would do different. And it really started to pay dividends the second half of the season. During the off season, and now with this other unexpected off season, a lot of that momentum has been broken. So you try to get back into the routine of here's the things that we were doing well. Daytona's its own animal, and we went to a few different racetracks and was starting to build that chemistry again, and now we've got this big break again, and now we're going into a totally different way of racing for the next month or two. So really, it's going to be a lot about who can find their footing again in terms of momentum, and certainly for some, I think iRacing will provide a tool for a lot of the drivers and maybe even some of the crew guys to help relate and get their feet back in the pool, so to speak, of, okay, this is how we need to do this moving forward.
Yeah, because it appears as if with this schedule, there might not be practice at a lot of these races, right? It'll just be qualifying race, and that's it.
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing. So, again, while the setup side of things, we have a lot of really expensive simulation tools that TRD and JGR has afforded us to sharpen over the years, and iRacing really can't compete at that level, but that's just the setup side. It doesn't necessarily put the driver in a loop, and it certainly isn't as accessible as iRacing for the crew chiefs and the engineers and that kind of thing. So anything you can do to foster communication and try to get a leg up on the competition, given the new environment, is certainly going to be valuable. And you know, while we all would like practice at the racetrack, we're all going to have to improvise and figure out what's the new best way to do it.
Right. I don't know how much you've paid attention to what's going on with the IndyCar side of things, Chris, with the IndyCar iRacing Challenge, but it's been interesting to me that on that side, the engineers and the strategists have been involved during the week with drivers. They plot fuel strategy. They talk about handling while they're running practice laps. It sounds like that isn't happening as much on the NASCAR side, specifically with you and Denny. You said, you know, Denny's kind of got his own support staff and system. Is there kind of a difference between NASCAR and IndyCar there, maybe?
Yeah, it certainly seems that there is. I can't honestly justify whether or not there should be, to be fair. You know, I believe you can learn something any way you choose to learn. So the fact that those guys are still working together and you know, working with strategy and trying to benefit from it in any way that they can, aside from having fun. Yeah. There is a lot of fun involved.
Sure.
I take my hats off to them. I think that's really cool. And it seems like it hasn't sort of taken the same level of seriousness on the NASCAR side, but I certainly pay close attention to it and am doing my stuff on the side, like we've talked about, just to make sure I can relate to them. One thing that I will say has been really neat is the Twitch broadcast that a lot of these drivers are doing, and Denny in particular. I have really enjoyed watching that as much or more than the race for me personally, because it allows me to evaluate how he works in more than just I'm watching the 11 car go around the racetrack and every now and then he keys the button up and talks to me. I visually can watch how he thinks, what he looks at, how he reacts. It just gives me a whole new aspect for what it is, kind of getting to visit inside of Denny Hamlin's mind while he's doing the real deal, which is, it's as close to it as it could be without the fear side of it. He's obviously not worried about crashing into a wall at 190 mile an hour, but but you get to really experience what it is that he's going through and how he thinks. And you know, what we do is largely about communication and psychology and understanding what's going on with your driver's mind and vice versa. And that's been a really neat aspect that I didn't realize I would get out of this going into it.
I'm glad you brought that up, Chris, because I feel like that is a window into the drivers that not just you as a crew chief, but all of us have really gotten that we've never had before. I agree with you. The Twitch streams are fascinating. And to me, it's the helmets off and being able to see that focus and concentration and intensity that we can't see that with an in-car camera when the helmets are on, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a rare thing. Like you won't get to see that ever again. I think, and I hope that NASCAR's maybe going to learn something from it, because I do think it's neat to have that level of accessibility, but the drivers aren't going to be taking their helmets or suits off anytime in real life, anytime soon. So, you know, you still won't necessarily be able to see into their eyes and really soak in what it is that they're experiencing at any given second. But I do think there's a lot to be learned from the industry. I think it seems to me that a lot of fans have enjoyed that level of accessibility.
What's impressed you the most about watching Denny from that perspective and the way he manages a race? And you said you've just noticed the way he's doing things during the race. What's impressed you the most about that?
Well, any of your great drivers can do what they do at a very high level, very naturally. It just comes natural. It's not something they really have to work at. Their processing speed mentally is just lights out fast. At 190 mile an hour, they're able to process what's going on and what they need to do next very quickly. And looking inside of his eyes, I used a specific example last year after we won Bristol. And I think in some of Denny's interviews, he told you that he was setting up the pass onto Benedetto with 30 or so laps to go and knew exactly how he was going to do it. And again, from my driving background and iRacing helped solidify that, that is impressive. Bristol, things are happening so fast, and what they're doing is so hard. People don't understand just how hard it is to do. But to have that mental awareness to still be able to think through every level of detail about how you're going to go about a pass 30 laps in advance while doing what is so incredibly difficult is fascinating. And I really hope all of our fans understand just how hard that is. So the Twitch stream really gives you a whole another level of, now I can see in his eyes. I can watch when he's looking up in the mirror and when he's not. And, you know, I can watch how he reacts when he hits a bad corner or if he hits a good corner or some of the physical cues that, you know, he's not saying these things pushing the button on the radio in a real world, but I'm getting to see everything he might say or think in these Twitch streams. So it's nuanced stuff. I can't give you specifics, but it's definitely been cool. He and I talked about that a little bit some in the early part of this, and he's like, man, I have no idea what I look like when I'm driving. Like, yeah, he said, I've never even thought about it. I'm like, yeah, it's been really cool to watch. So,
it has been, and he has no worries. I think it looks cool, and I think you've given us a lot of great detail there as well.
Reese's Peanut Butter Cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
Want to make mom's day? Get to your Nordstrom Rack now and score amazing deals for Mother's Day, which is Sunday, May 12th. Find tons of gifts from only $30 at Nordstrom Rack. Fragrance, jewelry, luxury bags, activewear, beauty, and more. Save on Kate Spade, New York, Stuart Weitzman, and Ted Baker, London. Great brands, great prices. So shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and treat mom to the good stuff from just $30.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com, TRUGREEN.com, to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
That kind of leads into my next question. I mean, we all know what a great iRacer he is and how long he's been doing it. Obviously, you have a lot of experience, Chris, with iRacing. You can appreciate what it's like for him as a driver. One of the first stories I ever did about Denny Hamlin was Richmond Times-Dispatch in 2004. It was about how he had finished third in Dale Jr.'s iRacing League at the time, ahead of Dale Jr., and that was what sort of got him on the radar. So we've known that Denny Hamlin can be such a great iRacer for so long, you know, more than a decade. What do you think makes him so good at it? Because it seems like some real-world drivers don't do as well in the iRacing world, and some guys just really get acclimated to it, too, and it's natural, you know, William Byron being another example.
Yeah, I think it's two things. His desire to compete at a high level at whatever it is that he does, and I think you see that out of a lot of your great ones, and I certainly would put Denny Hamlin in the great category. And then from that, what makes a driver great is their attention to detail. Understanding every little nuance about, you know, if I use the brakes this way, the car does this. If I hit my mark this way, the car does that. If I use my pedals in conjunction with my steering inputs this way, I get this reaction. There's just all of that stuff. Again, like Denny has alluded to, simulation racing uses the exact same inputs that real life does, whereas other simulations, we'll call them, for football or basketball or baseball, you can't do that. You don't get that. So it really provides a lot of crosstalk between why they're good in real life. You're watching it every day in iRacing, and it's just attention to detail, understanding that all the nuances matter. And I think one of the neat things in iRacing that maybe a lot of people don't fully realize is that, unlike real life, all the cars, quote unquote, are the same. The aerodynamics are exactly the same. They're fixed setup races, so the setups are exactly the same. Everyone's dealing with the exact same track conditions. So literally what you are watching is the inputs of the driver make all the difference. There are no other layers to the onion. It's just that. Now you're limited in not feeling the forces on your body, which is a major component of what these drivers do. Without kind of nerding out too much on you, they don't get any of the acceleration feels, which is hugely important to the mental aspect of actual racing. So some drivers just can't acclimate as well to that because it's such an odd feeling. But what you're watching is everyone competing with the exact same vehicle, but they're making the difference with their inputs and decisions. And I think that's a very rare insight. Even in real world, when we were doing IROC racing or you try to do spec series, right, you don't get that. You will never get that. No two cars are ever the same. It's impossible, except for in iRacing. And that's a really interesting side of it, I think.
That is. Yeah, I was going to say, it does remind me of, in IROC, they always had to say equally prepared because they really couldn't be identically prepared. But in iRacing, you can kind of remove that variable a little bit. And like you said, aside from G-forces, the fear factor, the bumps, everything else is exactly the same, right?
And I can't stress it enough. The fear factor is a big one.
Yeah.
And let's be real, right? Like, because there's a lot of great iRacers who are better than Denny Hamlin, no doubt about it. He would tell you that. But what makes what these drivers do so great in the real world is that they're doing it at 190 mile an hour with very real consequences from both the immediate physical aspect of if I wreck, this is going to hurt, to the business side of things. You know, they've got multi-million-dollar sponsors and hundreds of employees depending upon their success and their brand. And, you know, that's a lot of pressure, right? So you add those two things to it, and to still be able to perform at a high level is much, much different than what drivers do in iRacing. As much as iRacing can capture, it can't capture that part of it. And that's really what makes what these guys do in the real world so great.
Yeah, it's incredibly realistic, but it does have its limits. And I'm sure you're also glad that one of those limits is that Denny's 7-year-old daughter can't enter your pit box and wave a remote control and disconnect your team radios, right?
Yeah, I don't think we'll ever have anything quite like that happen in the real world, although I can think of some things that are similar. Hoods popping up when unexpected, or, you know, weird stuff like that. I mean, the real world has its glitches, but certainly nothing like a remote control turning the car off.
Yeah, that was something. Just got a few more for you, Chris. Obviously, it's great to have this as a distraction for all of us and a way to stay occupied while we're all trying to avoid going stir crazy. But does it make you a little bit antsy to be watching the racing and thinking, man, this is great, we've got the iRacing, but I really want to be back at the real world track soon?
Yeah, I wouldn't say the iRacing particularly makes me antsy. Certainly, as we're starting to get in the planning stages and things are starting to move from liquid to solid in terms of scheduling and here's how we're going to attack reimmersing ourselves into the season, antsy, excited, focused, apprehensive, all those words, because this is going to look unlike any NASCAR season in our history by a mile. Not a little bit, a lot. I obviously, being the crew chief, I'm a major part of building a plan and unfolding that logistically, right? So crew chiefs have enough variables to deal with on a daily basis under normal circumstances. This is going to be an amount of variables that is completely unparalleled. So you're going to see a lot like a year ago when the new rules package was unfolded and there was so much uncertainty. You never know who was going to be up front, when, or why. Well, this is going to be very similar, but in a different way, because we're dealing with so many unknowns about how to prepare for a race. If we go Wednesday racing, you know, not only are we not going to get to practice or qualify, but our prep time's cut in half, you know, because you'll be racing Sunday, then Wednesday, then Sunday, then Wednesday.
Right.
And oh, by the way, you don't get to practice. And oh, by the way, you know, it's just a lot of differences. So there's a lot to keep track of as a crew chief right now, certainly as the planning side of it is starting to actually matter. I mean, there was a while there, a few weeks, where it didn't do good to do a whole lot because it was just going to change 10 minutes from now anyway. But we're certainly past that. So it's exciting. One thing that I love about our sport, no matter the challenges, at the end of the day, whether it be a Saturday night or a Sunday or maybe even some Wednesdays here, they're going to hand out a checker flag and a trophy. And that signifies whoever did it the best on that day. And I don't care what the rules or circumstances was, that says that team did it the best. And that's our report card, you know, so I'm looking forward to getting back at it.
Can you even identify what the biggest obstacle will be, or it's just the unknown? There's too many unknowns at this point.
It mostly, there's a couple of them. One is the logistics of the teams being able to prepare the race cars. Now, fortunately, before we went into this hiatus, we all had cars ready for Atlanta. We all had cars ready for Homestead. So we do have a little bit of a backstop in terms of inventory. But, you know, between, you know, again, our cycle time's not 7 days a week. Now it'll be 3 days a week where we're putting another car on the racetrack. And then that car's got to go back into the system and get ready to go race again. So that's going to be a challenge. Certainly, as we go back to work, all the race teams are going to practice much different social distancing techniques than we ever have before. Well, that's going to be very unfamiliar, so it's going to slow productivity down until we figure out how to maximize that. So you've got the schedule accelerating in terms of prep time and productivity decelerating because of social distancing. So that's really going to be a challenge balancing that. And then the other side of it, of course, is in these races where we're going to unload with very little to no track time prior to the first lap of the race being, you know, counting, you know, we're counting score right away. Who can do that best? How do you prepare for that best? Who hits it the best? How do your drivers get locked in right away? You know, that first run establishes track position, right? Who is locked in right away and who's not? That's going to be the week-to-week challenge that you guys are going to get to see unfold on TV.
That'll be cool to watch. And as we sit here, it is 1:25 p.m. on Wednesday, Is it Tuesday or Wednesday? I'm losing track of
Wednesday.
It's Wednesday, April 29th. And we don't have a schedule yet, but we're getting closer, certainly. We're hearing things about the stay-at-home orders changing. What's the view right now from Joe Gibbs Racing? Have you been able to go to the shop? Are people at the shop beginning to prepare cars? Do you have any updates on that front?
Well, yeah, thankfully, today's technology allows us to all stay networked pretty well, even though we're not allowed to or congregating physically at a certain place. So a lot of the planning meetings have been happening for, weeks by some of our staff. And now the last week or so with the competition group to really start sinking our teeth into actually laying out a plan. But we haven't physically been back to work yet. That's happening any day now. And it's going to happen in waves of essential personnel, non-essential personnel, and all the things we need to do to stay safe. But there's been work going on behind the scenes, no doubt, and everybody's looking forward to getting back to the shop and trying to get going with our lives again, right? Trying to establish a new normal.
Sure. And I heard, Chris, about a week is what it would take to prepare a car to get ready to go to a racetrack. Does that sound about right for you guys?
I think it may vary from team to team. I certainly don't want to speak for the entire garage. But again, fortunately, we had Atlanta cars prepared, Homestead cars prepared. Those cars are already put together in our shop, and certainly less time for those cars to get ready to go to the racetrack. So I would say a week or less, we could be ready for that race. But again, 3 days later, there's another race. 4 days later, there's another race. 3 days, I mean, just because you got a head start doesn't mean you can't fall behind really quickly. So we all need to get back in the shop and get prepared for what's coming.
Yeah, everybody's tongues are going to be wagging a lot pretty soon here. I want to wrap up here, Chris. I mean, you guys started off 2020 so well. Second consecutive Daytona 500 win. All that momentum. Denny didn't quite have the results you probably want the next few races, but how do you restart things now whenever things get going again? I mean, do you fall back on, hey, when we started 2020, we were the best team at the biggest race of the year and go from there? Is it, hey, clean slate, we got to look at this as a totally new beginning? How do you look at things for the 11 for the rest of the year?
Yeah, so if I just snapshot our year real quick, Daytona was, we had a very strong race car and we're able to capitalize with a win there. Vegas, honestly, is our worst track on the circuit. We knew that was going to be a challenge. We probably should have finished a little bit better than we did, but, you know, some strategy stuff and then just a poor restart. We sped at the end there, didn't get a great finish. Fontana, we ran well. We had a good race car in the race, got a little damage on it, but we ran fine. I was happy with how we ran there. And then Phoenix, we wrecked early on, but I feel like we had a top three car. And we probably didn't have all the magic that we had the fall race of Phoenix in 2019, but we were pretty close to where we need to be. I left our confidence. So to answer your question, moving forward, certainly a lot has changed. But as I name the racetracks that are being rumored, we're talking about Darlington maybe a couple times, Charlotte maybe a couple times, Martinsville, Bristol, Atlanta, Homestead. These are racetracks that are right in Denny Hamlin's wheelhouse. So honestly, I couldn't be more excited by the schedule that sounds like is laying in front of us, because I think there's a ton of opportunity for us to wrap our hands firmly around this season, and I look forward to doing it.
Well, we're all looking forward to getting out there and watching you do it as well. Really appreciate all the time you gave us here on the NASCAR NBC podcast, Chris. Thanks for being here, and good luck the rest of the season whenever it begins, and we'll look forward to seeing you.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Our thanks again to Chris Gabehart for joining us. Obviously, to hear him tell it, life is very busy right now with getting the number 11 prepared for whenever NASCAR restarts the season, so we appreciate him making time for us. And speaking of NASCAR hitting the track again, be sure to stay tuned, of course, to NBCSports.com/NASCAR for coverage of the resumption of the 2020 season. NASCAR Talk's Dustin Long, Jerry Bonkowski, and Daniel McFadden will have all those stories for you on what's to come. And keep an eye on the Motorsports and NBC YouTube channel as well. Jeff Burton and Steve Wittart have been doing some great NASCAR America at Home videos there. They provide all the insight you normally get on NASCAR America. It's just from the comfort of the homes of Jeff and Steve instead of our normal NASCAR America studio. The NASCAR and NBC podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, please leave a rating and review. That really helps us out. And any feedback, you can always send it to me on Twitter, @NateRyan is my handle. Thanks again for listening to the NASCAR and NBC podcast.
Want to make mom's day? Get to your Nordstrom Rack now and score amazing deals for Mother's Day, which is Sunday, May 12th. Find tons of gifts from only $30 at Nordstrom Rack. Fragrance, jewelry, luxury bags, activewear, beauty, and more. Save on Kate Spade New York, Stuart Weitzman, and Ted Baker London. Great brands, great prices. So shop your Nordstrom Rack store today and treat mom to the good stuff from just $30.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.